It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, but there's more reasons to fear, but let's try not to by understanding what's going on with Iran. Well, Iran's in the news. It looks like, this is how the report, this is why I don't jump on this stuff right away, because, you know, it just keeps changing. You know, the initial report is that Ahmadinejad and, let me tell you how I remember his name. I'm in a shed. Yeah, so that's to help you out. Another talk show host, I heard do that, and I'm going, man, that helps a lot. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was unharmed by an attack with a homemade explosive device on his motorcycle during a visit to the western city of Hamadan on Wednesday. The source said Ahmadinejad's convoy was targeted as he was traveling from Hamadan's airport to give a speech at a local sports arena. The president was unhurt, but others had been injured in the blast. One person was arrested. Now, as you know, this is the initial story, but what happens is I have a lot of questions. His motorcade, was he riding a motorcycle? Was he on the back? Was he holding on? Was he, little cycle, big cycle? What was going on? And what we find out, but Iranian state media later said only a firecracker had been set off by an excited young man happy to see the president. So which one is it? I don't know. But he got him in the news. Okay. All right. So we got firecrackers because we love our president. I was so excited I threw a firecracker at the president. I wonder how that go over here in the United States. But, you know, it's just, it'll be a big deal. But what else do we got going on with Iran? Ray McGovern, we'll get on the show here, if not today, soon. I know Ray, been having him on the radio quite a bit, and he was one of the lone voices going out there saying, no, man, all this war thing, we know this is all crap. He was one of the guys that was preparing the intelligence brief for the president. So, I mean, this guy's got, he's got skills. Well, he's part of a group called the steering group of this. I'll give you a list of the names here in a little bit. But the organization is called Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. Now, we have Ray Close, Director of Operations, Near East Division, CIA for 26 years. Okay. Phil Duraldi as Director of Operations CIA, 20 years. These guys have been around a while. So you have to understand that they're when they're giving their opinion on something here and writing it down and going on record, it's because, at least they think they know something. Larry Johnson, Director of Intelligence CIA, Department of State, Department of Defense Consultant, 24 years. And let's see, W. Patrick Lang, Colonel USA, Special Forces retired, Senior Executive Service Defense Intelligence Officer from Middle East, South Asia, Director of Hummin T Collection, whatever that is, Defense Intelligence Agency, 30 years. Ray McGovern, U.S. Army Intelligence Officer, Director of Intelligence CIA, 30 years, and the list goes on. Well, Ray had something to say. An open letter to President Obama saying, man, we know what you're going to do with Iran. We'll talk about it when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, who loves you, baby, who loves you. Yeah, producer Sierra, and she's all over it. We got Ray McGovern coming on at the top of the hour. And so we'll talk about it a little bit and get us all up to speed so we know what he's talking about. But the main thing is that they are of the opinion. And, you know, it's I don't know what we're going to use to disagree with them. I mean, there's so much evidence of this having had happened in the past. There is this Israel thing going on. I'll just read you the first paragraph so you understand where they're going. We, being VIPs, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Now, I tell you how this came about. A lot of these guys were in the CIA. A lot of them worked with various levels of the cabinet, even. You know, Larry Johnson, I think he was Powell's guy or something. Let's take a look. But the main thing is that these guys are in deep in the intelligence community. And I'm just, do you believe them? I mean, you know, I mean, they're coming. Are they part of the plan? And I know some people, I mean, can they be just as duped as the rest of us? You know, I don't, of course they can. I mean, you know, are they part of the, you know, the brainwashing of us all? Well, my concern is that somebody that knows that they're not crying wolf. This has been done before and they know it. And they're going, look, this is not good. You know, they are of retirement age. I know their grandfathers, their fathers, husbands, and you have some good people, or they have limits. There's a lot of people, if you're in government and certainly in the intelligence community, I mean, you can do a lot of mental hoop jumping to get yourself to go along with the program in the name of, I don't know, America, MK. I swore to uphold and defend and do it. And then at a certain point, you see, you know, that's not what's going on here. That's, dude, nope, that's, you know, there's something else going on. And then you have people that get into positions like Ray and Johnson and these guys. Yeah, here, let's pull it up. Larry C. Johnson, a former analyst at the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency who moved subsequently in 89 to U.S. Department of State, where he served 4 years as the Deputy Director for Transportation Security, Anti-Terrorism Assistance Training, and Special Operations in the State Department's Office of Counterterrorism. He left government service in October 93 and set up a consulting business. He currently is the co-owner CEO of Berg Associates, blah, 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 blah. So he's, you know, during the Daddy Bush days, during the first Gulf War, you know, during the back when I guess there were real terrorists. I guess there are now, too. But I just, you know, how do you know what to believe? So this is when these guys get together and they say, you know, we are very concerned about something enough. We're going to put our names on it. We're going to send it out. We're going to, it's directly addressed straight to the President of the United States. And many of us have done these reports for presidents before. That was their job. And we're going, look, we may not have the title now. We may be collecting a pension or, you know, a retirement check, you know, after this. But you know what? Maybe it was a little bit less political back then. It was more like, you know, we don't die thing. Cold War stuff. There are nuclear-tipped missiles that we need to be concerned about. So they see these patterns, and I don't know, do they have a better perspective now that they're out than when they were in? Ray McGovern, tell you a little bit about him, they'll be coming on later, is a retired CIA officer turned political activist. McGovern was a federal employee under seven U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefings at the White House for many of them. That's what he did. This is why he's so on this. And I talk to Ray on a regular basis, and he's been recovering from cancer, and he's in remission, and he's been, you know, a lot of times he'll come to Phoenix, you know, for some of his treatments and so on. So, you know, we get to talk on a regular basis. Charles is good friends with him. We'd see him. And I keep trying to get him to come to a Freedom Summit, but there's always something. But the one thing that let me go ahead and give him a little career, and you'll understand. McGovern was a mid-level officer in the CIA in the 1960s, where his focus was analysis of Soviet policy toward Vietnam. McGovern was one of President Ronald Reagan's intelligence briefers from 81 to 85. He was in charge of preparing daily security briefs for Reagan, Vice President George Bush, the National Security Advisor, and Joint Chief of Staff, and the Cabinet. Later, McGovern was one of several senior CIA analysts who prepared the president's daily brief during the first Bush administration. Upon retirement, McGovern was awarded the Intelligence Commendation Medal from Bush, which he later returned, and worked for Washington-based nonprofits before becoming co-director of the Servant Leadership School in Washington. Now McGovern works with the Tell the Word, the publishing arm of the Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C. So he's a religious guy, too. You know, that's get that in there. This has been, you know, it was that background. You know, he's not a stranger to the White House or the Oval Office. I mean, this is what he did. So then he becomes an activist. McGovern has been an outspoken commentator on intelligence-related issues since the late 1990s. He was heavily critical of the government's handling of the Nguyen Ho Lee case in 2000. In 2002, he was publicly critical of President George W. Bush's use of government intelligence in the lead-up to the war in Iraq. In 2003, together with former CIA employees, McGovern founded the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. The organization is dedicated to analyzing and criticizing the use of intelligence, specifically relating to the war in Iraq. In January 2006, McGovern began speaking out on behalf of the anti-war group Not In Our Name. According to the group's press release, McGovern served symbolic war crimes indictments on the Bush White House from a People's Tribunal. And then, you know, the Rumsfeld thing. This is where you kind of shot the fame here. In May 2006, McGovern attended a speech by then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and accused him of lying about Iraq pre-war intelligence during the question and answer session. McGovern challenged Rumsfeld in several statements in which Rumsfeld was on the record for saying, McGovern asked him, "Why did you lie to us? Why did you lie to get us into a war, which was not necessary and has caused these kinds of casualties? You said you knew where the weapons of mass destruction were." Rumsfeld, "I did not. I said I knew where suspect sites were." McGovern, "You said you knew where they were, near Tikrit, near Baghdad, and east, west, south, and north somewhat." Rumsfeld denied using this language despite having stated precisely this on March 30, 2003 on ABC's This Week. Rumsfeld had added in the original statement in reference to one particular facility, "We saw them from the air that there were dozens of trucks that went into that facility after the existence of it became public in the press, and they moved things out, they dispersed them and took it away and went," and so goes on and on and on back and forth. What happened was, here you have a CIA analyst. This is what his job was. He would take this information, prepare it in a brief, and go to the president of the United States, including Reagan and others, since back in the late 60s. So 27 years he's in there. This is what he did, okay? And he goes in and he sees the intelligence. He has friends. There's people, I'm sure, that are leaking stuff to him. And I remember, what was her name? She was a Turkish, her name will come to me. And she was Sibelle Edmonds. Sibelle Edmonds was a Persian-speaking, Turkish-speaking. She spoke at least 3 to 5 languages. And after 9/11, she made her services available. "Hey, man, you need me, let me know." Finally, the FBI comes and they just pick her up. And, you know, we need you to come with us now, as a matter of fact. So they go and she starts translating a lot of this Turkish stuff. You know, the FBI knew that there was something in here between, you know, congressmen and there were lobbyists and there was this Israel, you know, Mossad link. And they had all this stuff, you know, translate this stuff. She found out so much about all of the intrigue and the bribing of congressmen and, you know, the setting up of sex tapes, you know, or getting them on film and blackmailing this stuff and drug trade and arms deals and all this stuff. And she says, hey, looky here. Oh, and this person you just hired to be another translator, they're part of it. What are you doing? Your services are no longer required and you're not allowed to say anything to anybody. All these kinds of people started to hook up. And what did you know about it? Well, we'll talk about it when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the times they are a-changing.
Yeah, you better start swimming. to something, away from something, something, because, man, you just sink, and then what? So get busy, start learning. I'll learnify you. You know, but I don't know how much I have to keep doing this over and over and over. I mean, I've been doing this for years, and I'll tell you how my philosophy has changed. I mean, this is how talk radio usually works. I'll just tell you how, you know, certainly in, you know, traditional talk radio, this is what happens. If I want to keep maintaining, you know, building an audience, it can be flash whiz bang. I mean, you know, I got the Howard Stern thing. I'm getting, you know, naked massages on the radio. I had a friend of mine that from high school that was a talk show host that got, in exchange for promotion of it, he wanted to get a vasectomy. Well, they gave it to him for free as long as he did it live on the air. I mean, it's funny as heck, you know, and he's like, well, I'm going to tell you all the stuff he said, but, you know, and he married a good friend of mine, a girl that I knew in high school, so we're all friends. They got married, so it was funny as heck to all of us that knew these guys, him and they're getting a vasectomy and everybody and it's live on radio. Get a lot of audience for that, or at least, you know, it's memorable. I mean, I didn't forget it. So this is, you can do that kind of stuff, or you can have a soap opera. You follow individuals. You have characters. You build an ensemble. You know, you have the, if we wanted to, we could do the Obama administration. We could get to intimately know Holder as Attorney General. We could get to know Janet Napolitano, you know, head of the Homeland Security. We could get to know, we could follow these people and everything that they do, and you get to know them, and you love them, you hate them, you whatever, and then they're gone. And then what? How much did you learn about their position? Was it more character, their force of personality, or was it the actual shiny badge that they had? Do different people in those positions have the same kind of powers? Is it, you know, is Biden as influential as Cheney was? Rumsfeld, they replace him with Gates, and then the Obama administration keeps Gates. Why? So how much do we need to know about these people? As we do this over the years, producing and being a talk show host and everything, you get intimately involved in these people as if that individual is the one that was the personification of the evil. Rumsfeld must go! Or, I want Rumsfeld to stay! Or, you know, it's ouch, quit it, ouch, quit it. And you never get to the point of what the heck it was that they did. What was their job? What was the proper role of the government in general, and what role did they play in it? How is this position supposed to be even justified, much less used to expand individual liberty? So when you start dealing with people, you start dealing with characters, you start dealing with, you know, this the story of them, and that's why they want to do it. I mean, oh, I grew up in a, you know, blah, 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 you know. How is it that I'm supposed to care? It's like a celebrity thing. You know, am I supposed to care how bad Lindsay Lohan's parents are? You know, am I supposed to care? I mean, am I allowed not to care? How does it affect me? You know, so I don't do that anymore. I mean, you get so immersed, and then the administration changes. Yay, let's go get to learn these people again. Why? Why? They all want to do the same thing. It's all just a facade. It's all just veneer for them to reach in your pocket and take that which is yours and make it theirs. That's all that's going on. It's no more complicated than that. There are those who just want to be left alone. There are those that just won't leave them alone. I mean, you try and make it more complicated, and I'm trying to clear the mind fog. They distract you with all of these details. But there are people in opposition to not necessarily the individuals. It's to the system that was supposed to, they were promised in their little junior high, you know, class that was there to protect them. And it's not. And they start to challenge it. And they find out just how screwed the system really is. Sibel Edmonds was hired as a contractor to work as an interpreter in the translation unit of the FBI on September 20th, 2001. So we're talking like less than 2 weeks, man. Get your butt over here. Among her main roles was to translate covertly recorded conversations by Turkish diplomat and political targets. According to Edmonds, she began facing problems when she reported to FBI managers various incidents that she considered misconduct and incompetence involving her superior, Mike Fighali, and others that she says she observed while employed as a translator between December 01 and March 02. Edmonds would escalate her complaints to the FBI's Office of Professional Responsibility and the U.S. Department of Justice's Office of Inspector General. In response, she claims that managers retaliated against her, and she was finally fired March 22, 2002. In June 2002, the Associated Press and Washington Post reported upon investigation that Edmonds was dismissed because her actions were disruptive, breached security, and that she performed poorly at her job. A later internal investigation by the FBI found that many of Edmonds' allegations of misconduct had some basis in fact, and that her allegations were at least a contributing factor to the FBI's decision to terminate her services, but were unable to substantiate all her allegations, nor did they make a statement regarding the dismissal being improper. Edmonds' allegations of impropriety at the FBI later came to the attention of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which held unclassified hearings on the matter June 17, 02 and July 9, 02. During the hearings, the FBI provided various unclassified documents and statements relating to the case, which led to Senators Patrick Leahy and Chuck Grassley sending letters to Inspector General Fine, Ashcroft, Mueller, respectively, asking for explanations to call upon an independent audit. I'll tell you why when we come back. Big stuff came out. Oh, you don't go up against a man and not respect the retaliation.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. I'm getting this ready for you. Here we go. Let me push the button. Boom, shakalaka. Yeah, I love Freedom's Phoenix. Well, you go to freedomsphoenix.com, and let me go ahead and post it to the front page. What I did, there was a documentary. I just remembered this. It was called Kill the Messenger. And it was featuring Sibel Edmonds, and it was done in France. You know, I mean, at the release, I mean, you know, that's just the way things work, you know. So you go to freedomsphoenix.com, and I push the button, boom, there, it's at the top page. And you can see the documentary on Sibel Edmonds, and it just kind of tells the story of what was going on. Now, what happened was there was a lawsuit, and it was the victims, it was filed by families of 600 victims of the September 11th. Against Saudi banks and charity organizations and companies, and eventually it was dismissed. But Edmonds was planned to file a deposition in the case, and that's when Ashcroft, in May of 2004, freaked out. Of course, he was the front guy for the government, and Ashcroft submitted statements to justify the use of the state secrets privilege against the planned deposition of Edmonds. Okay, they just go, no, this is national security stuff. What is, man? Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to talk about it. So they retroactively, the FBI retroactively classified top secret all the material and statements that had been, you know, provided to the Senate Judiciary Committee in 02 relating to Edmonds' own lawsuit about her being fired and so on. So this is what started the Sybil Edmonds thing. Later, there was a, you know, I don't have the information. Later, there was, it was, I think it was for the 08 election cycle. There was a congresswoman that was targeted in something that was said by one of her opposition candidates that related to some of the information of Sybil Edmonds. And she filed suit against him for libel or slander or something like that. And he goes, okay. And they go to trial. And he goes, I got a witness. I call Sybil Edmonds. So they go up. Were they going to block her testimony? Now, she's got a subpoena. You know, this it. You know, this is a court-ordered thou shalt show up. You know, what's the State Department going to do? You know, what's the Defense Department? What's the Justice Department? What's the White House? They're, you know, what the heck? Well, she gave testimony. We have on the show every now and then a guy named Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. He's big on election integrity. You know, it's just all this Diebold voting machine thing got him going. And he's a, you know, progressive left and, you know, love government as long as it does what he wants it to do. And, you know, we're friends and so on. We overlap with some of our activism. And he was the one that took all of this information, consolidated it, put it up on his website. And for the first time, we have videotape of Sybil Edmonds telling her story. So this was, you know, big, but they were able to hold it off for at least six or seven years while millions of people have died. I mean, you 100,000 this, a little bit there. No, it's in the million. I mean, you know, the people that have died as a result of. And then, of course, whatever, you know, problems we got, just throw that in there, too. Because she was not allowed to tell what was really going on behind 9/11, what was really happening. I mean, it's all this tapestry of corruption. We're just, everything that you see, everything that you know, everything that's printed in the paper, everything, it's all a lie. See, this is one thing that I learned early on. I was telling the story yesterday about my first radio interview that I did was 1992 or something like that, 91, 92. And the radio station, it was a Clear Channel affiliate here, yeah, KFYI, you know. They have this where Rush and Hannity and all these guys are. And what they did is they said, Ernie, we want you to tell the story. I had, you know, firsthand inside kind of the Sybil thing of the corruption inside Arizona politics and relates to commerce and what was going on during the Daddy Bush administration and how it related to here, the senator this and congressman that and the governor. And you know, I was just a young kid got in the middle of this thing because you keep asking, you know, a question and demand an answer. You start finding out stuff. And that's where Luke Rutkowski gets his claim to fame is because that's what We Are Change is all about. Look, we're going to get an answer to this freaking question. And you have 18 to 25-year-old kids with a video camera in your face all the time following Bloomberg around. And you know, sooner or later, you start to, just by them not answering certain questions, you kind of get the idea what's going on. So they're just in their face. Well, I was doing that before there was, you know, video cameras everywhere. And they wanted my story. They wanted it bad. They wanted, it was going to be an hour show, wound up being a 3-hour show. They're bumping people and some, ooh, this is good. And the phones are all lit up. Tell us everything. Well, to do that, they would not break the story. There's no way they're just going to have Ernie just get up there and start spewing. No. It's got to be in print first. Then I go and I talk to the editorial board of the Mason Tribune here, which is part of the Freedom Communications chain of papers. And I go in and they sat down around me and I go, let me tell you what you don't know. And what you don't know is that you're not going to print this. There is no way you're going to go. I mean, look, I look at your newspaper and I started opening it up, you know, car dealerships and developers and housing and all that. I go, you see this money here, this advertising you have here? This is who controls this paper, and these are the people that are behind, you know, blah, 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 blah. So they're like, ooh, you know, he has a point. So that's why we got our own printing press and all this stuff. We just bypass the media to the point that they're irrelevant now. You know, they're just dropping like flies. Why? Because they're not relevant. Nobody believes them anymore. They're controlled by, you know, large advertisers that get their money from government, you know, programs and developments and building projects and light rail and stadiums and, you know, and they get special sweetheart deals on land that they transfer from the Bureau of Land Management so they can do a development that only they can, blah, 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 blah. Just how it works. And I'm sure it's the same thing where you are. Because that's one thing that the internet showed us is how this mechanics of government are the same. And a lot of times it's the same people or branches of. I mean, all over the country. It's just phenomenal. We just started realizing this in early 94. So we're going, okay, so we're battling a cultural thing. We're battling an education thing. We're battling a principled thing. You know, if we go after every one of these, you know, it's so large and so diverse that you even if you win somewhere, they just get stronger somewhere else. You know, so you got to go to the people. So the editorial board sat around and they're like, wow, I don't know what we're going to do. I remember the guy's name. The editorial page editor's name was Hal DeKaiser. And he goes like this. He says, all right, Ernie, what we're going to do, you write a guest article. You go ahead and write a guest article, you know, special opinion, my turn, whatever the heck it is. You do this, we'll publish it. So I just went principled. Even back then, I mean, you can go out and quit it. This, and I go, look. This whole thing, let me tell you what's going on. So I kind of gave my spiel on, you know, the fundamental problems with, you know, just government in general and why this stuff happened and, you know, what I don't even know if I even named any names. But it was enough. That's what they wanted. Enough for then the radio station could go, hey, we saw your article over here. And just, well, pray tell, come tell us what prompted you to write that article. When they were the ones that set it up for me to write the article so they could have me on the radio. This is how radio works. This is how television works. If you want to get on television, first you have to have video. That's the only way you're going to get on television unless it's already printed in the paper. Then they go around and get interviews or something. If it bleeds, it leads. If you have smoke is not enough. It has to be flames. They want fire. Okay, I learned that as a young journalist. When I was in high school, I did photography. You know, I would go around and sell photographs to the Arizona Republic. It was a flood. I knew where to go, man. You want to get the best flood pictures, man? Here we go. You know, the SST comes in lamp. Boom, I'm taking off school. I'm going. When they bring in the steam engines for the nuclear power plant in Rocky Point, I had friends in high school that had family down there. We went down there for 2 weeks. We got, you know, after the storm and so on, they couldn't dock it. And all the press left. We were the only ones there to get pictures. Yeah, and how much you want for these? You know, you're going to pay for them. So we made hundreds of dollars on that. That was big money for us back then. So I understood, even at a young age in high school, how the media worked, because they would explain it to me. Editors would go, look, Ernie, you know, blah, 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 this is what we want, and you got to have names, there's got to be the story of it, you know. So I kind of got a real life, you know, none of this in the classroom crap. I was doing it. So I understood why they do this. Radio does not have the staff, generally. They have a producer, like they'll call people and so on. It's kind of the same thing. We got the printed stuff up on Freedom's Phoenix. We're going to talk about it and so on. But I'm more than willing, you know, to let somebody have their say. If you got, you know, credentials that you know what you're talking about, or you got a good history, or I just want to yak at you and you want to make a fool of yourself on my show, yeah, be my guest, you know, whatever. You know, inform me, entertain me, and hopefully both. So this is, I understood what was happening. Who ran the news? It was the reporters on the street. Thomas Wolfe, I remember it was in the late 80s. There was a PBS forum that they had. It was at some university. They're up on stage. And Thomas Wolfe was one of the guys. And the moderator was Ted Koppel. I remember that. And they were talking about the future of television, what was coming. And what they were saying was, you know, it's just computers are just getting started. I mean, this is, you know, they were really being visionaries looking at what's going on pretty much right about now. I mean, when your television screen has got HDMI hook up into your computer, boom, you're on the internet and your TV and computer become the same thing. And you can watch Hulu, whatever Andy Griffith show you ever wanted forever, you know, done. I mean, this is where I say we're going. It's where we are. You know, and all these young people know it. I mean, every episode of everything that was on last week, you can find on television through your internet. So I'm going, okay, you just download it on your TiVo. You know, your DVR, digital video recorder, man. You just push a button, it downloads it from the internet, whatever stuff you want. Like Sabella Edmonds' documentary on Google. Boom, push a button, goes in. I watch it on my television at home right now. I got in my bedroom, I got my computer hooked up to my big screen. You know, it's up there on the wall. And I just go whenever. And the reason I did it, I have a wireless keyboard. It's this little thing you plug into a USB on your computer. I have a wireless keyboard and a wireless tracker ball, like a mouse thing. And the reason was is so I can sit up in bed and edit video. I can sit there because it just takes so long. And I'm like, look, this is killing me. So I have, you know, a 42-inch or something on the wall up there. And it's a computer monitor, too, if I wanted to. I flip a switch and boom. Or just put it on that channel, have the HDMI 1 or 2, whatever it is, and I go and start working the computer. So I can watch it. And the reason, one of the big motivations is I used to, when I'm doing radio, you watch a lot of video online. And like Frontline. Frontline was doing, you know, different thing, the PBS thing and so on, but they do it in 6-minute segments. So you're always having to go, you're laying in bed and you're watching on your computer screen. You got a nice little screen there and you see it well enough. So my wife and I, Don and I, are sitting there watching it. Every 6 minutes, I got to get up, go over, click the next one. Got to be a drag. Now, what's the point of having all this stuff? So we got it hooked up into the screen. Then I can just click. You know, the next one from bed with my little wireless trackball. That was the beginning. Now it's getting to the point to where, heck, they just have the whole episode. You just, you know, download it to your whatever, your hard drive or something, or a DVR for your TV, and it goes up. This is not later. This is now. This is what's coming. So what do they, you know, how are they doing it before? Thomas Wolfe. And the Ted Koppel event that they had at some university explained it to me. They're saying, you know, there was some guy from 60 Minutes, and he says, when we do interviews, there's probably 70-80% of the footage that we record winds up on the floor. I mean, you know, we don't use it. It gets cut out. It's edited. You know, there's all this. You're going to be able to push a button, and this was 20 years ago. They go, you're going to be able to push the button that says, tell me more, tell me more. I want to see the whole thing. Give me some more on this one subject, whatever. And I remember seeing Starship Troopers, the movie, and it's about, you know, future fighting bugs in space and whatever. And they were doing television things, you know, want to learn more? Click here. Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more. And it reminded me of that. I'm going, that's exactly what they were talking about. And you're watching PBS on Frontline, and, you know, click here for more stuff. Go to pbs.org and you can get more of this. Or like Jon Stewart runs an interview along for the Daily Show, and he'll just like, you know, just go to the site and we'll go ahead and keep talking and you can watch the whole thing later. That's the power of the internet. So what has happened is now you're in a situation to where you have all this extra footage that if you're interested on something, you can go do it. But Thomas Wolfe made a point. He's going, you know, where television gets all this stuff, where the radio gets all this information, do you think they're out going and doing all investigative work? Do you think they're out finding who these people are? No. They get press release by, you know, news by government press release, by government handout. You want to get the shot? You want to get access? You want to not be bugged by the guys on the side of the road so your cameras can get the whatever? Then you do some butt kissing. You know, this is how it works for them. Where the real news was gathered, where the real news was gotten, was from small, little newspapers or big newspapers and all of the reporters that were out there. There were tens of thousands of reporters that started getting cut back. And cut back, and cut back more. And Thomas Wolfe said, you know, he goes, it doesn't matter. You can go tell me more all you want. If there's no more, there's nothing there. It's all sanitized. Nobody went out and got the story, talked to the people. You know, the guy's ex-girlfriend's former roommate. I mean, nobody did that. If you don't have anybody out there doing that, who does it? It was almost like a script. They eliminated those people. the beat reporter, the people that are investigative, the small little whatever, they went away for a decade, two decades. But then what happened? Here come the bloggers.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, where you need to go get all your goodies. Yeah, learn a little bit of something. You know, you go there right now, and you'll see I have up towards the top of the page Sybelle Edmonds' documentary, Kill the Messenger, and Ray McGovern's Mr. President, preempt an Israeli attack on Rambai. Well, we're going to find out by when he comes on in the next segment here at the top of the hour. So Ray and I have been friends, and I'm telling you, I have a lot of respect for a man that, you know, back when it was unpopular. I mean, he, a CIA analyst that, you know, give the daily briefings to the presidents of these United States, one after another for decades, and then he's going, W, you lying sack of snot. Rumsfeld, scumbag. Cheney, war criminal. I mean, he just, because he knew. He didn't think he knew. He knew. And if you know what's going to happen and how bad this thing is going to get, there's decisions to be made. You know, a lot of people made the decision just to be quiet. And then, of course, the administration made the decision to shut you up. And then where was the media? Well, they had eliminated most of the report. What happened when Helen Thomas goes up to President Bush and she says, first you said there was a link to 9/11, and then you admit that that wasn't so. You said a weapons of mass destruction, and we find there aren't any. You say that, she goes, so tell me. And this is, she's sitting in the front row center there, you know, the big seat everybody's fighting over. I guess Fox got it now or something. And they go, so tell me, what was the reason we went into Iraq? Next, you're out, done, gone. And then later, you know, years later, she does the Israel, you know, you should just go back to Germany, and Cotton, you know, said something anti-Israel. Boy, that is so not allowed. So, I mean, she's done. She's gone. I don't know where she is now. I mean, it's about time, I guess, for her to retire anyway. But, you know, she was asking the question. She's giving them what for. You know, I interviewed No Commercial Interruptions, 40 minutes, Sam Donaldson one time. I did that back in 2003. You know, we're going into what, man, I want, all right, Sam, you're in the White House court, but let's do it. Let's duke it out. So he and I had an interesting conversation. 40 minutes, I kept him on. I was nice enough to keep him on, but I got to ask what I wanted to about how it really works. You know, I bet you if you do a Google search on, you go to my archive, but if you do a Google on Sam Donaldson, Ernest Hancock, I bet it comes up. Donaldson, Ernest Hancock. Let's see what happens. Blah, 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 blah. I don't see it. You know, maybe I'll go find it and I'll put it up. Because the thing that is, no, maybe it's the first one right there. Let me see. Archive. Yeah, that might be it. Okay, so you just go to my, well, anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll talk about it later. What happens is I learned from Sam that, you know, there is an etiquette. That's why they have the White House Correspondents' Dinner every year. All the correspondents, okay, you're in the club. You're the crowd. You're the ones with access. You're the ones that we talk to. You're the ones that we use to penetrate into the matrix. This is a club. And what messed up their party was Freedom's Phoenix and sites just like it and individual bloggers that went out and said, you mean I can just start writing? And I understood from the beginning, from email list, I go, news reporting is all about one thing, credibility. It's all about one thing, that people give a crap what you have to say. What happened? Where do you think Drudge came from? He's just a guy in an apartment talking about Clinton's blue dress. And they found a use for him. Oh, just another root of the grapevine. But, you know, here comes alternative media. We'll be right back with Ray McGovern in just a little bit.